Reopen the hearings on the GMO provisions, and the process today is that we have had some written questions from councillors, which we'll perhaps get you to cover off. Everybody will take everything else as read, but we'll just get you to cover off the responses to the questions, and then we'll open for any other questions. So, I think the response came in.
I can read it out if you like.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you want us to read out the statement you circulated, ZNL circulated last week? Is that going
to
be helpful?
I don't think we need
no.
to read
it.
No,
just need to summarise it.
Just a summary would be all we need, thanks.
Okay.
And then there'll be a may well be some questions and clarification, so just get the summary and then clarification of the questions would be good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, well, I can start off if you like, and Peter can chime in wherever possible. So we pre-circulated a response last week regarding a number of questions that were put to us from Councillor Blakey and Yeoman. These dealt with the first question there was the inclusion of all three permitted activities is questioned as possibly inconsistent with the status of GMOs as prohibited. So this is in relation to research within contained laboratories and medical applications and veterinary applications. I suppose in response to all three of those, the large justification for that was the evidence that was in the hearing for the previous plan changes, so the Auckland Metro Plan, the Whangarei District Plan. With regard to contained labs, the advice was that they'd be considered to be risk-free to a certain extent. I guess there's only so much you can control, but on the basis of what we're looking at, that was the expert advice. Professor Heinemann as well gave that advice under the previous hearing. So we look to incorporate those provisions into here as a consistency, reasons of consistency, but also because of the evidence that we've heard previously. For medical applications as well, we note that the unitary plan had an introductory note which said that the provisions did not cover medical applications of GMOs, and that's really something to do with the scope under the Resource Management Act in terms of applying provisions to medical applications. And then there was a court challenge to that matter where the University of Auckland actually appealed to get a specific provision that was permitted. So I guess in a way we front-footed that to put that into the provisions to avoid future appeal. And also with veterinary applications, there's a number of reasons we've put there as to why we think it's appropriate that they're included. One of those being that district and regional plans should not unnecessarily inhibit the treatment of animals. And there's also important controls within those provisions, so requiring a veterinarian to administer the GMO, that was quite important in the evidence that was heard regarding the likelihood of risk. So it's very clear that it has to be administered by a vet. So that sort of summarised response to that first question. The second question that we had was GMO trials as a discretionary activity. This is something that's been given quite careful consideration throughout the entire response to this issue. And ultimately, we concluded that a discretionary activity status was appropriate because, unlike no release, it is possible that a trial could emerge in the future that's important to be undertaken to prove if the GMO can be safe. It would be subject to in the provisions as drafted, it would be fully notified. It's a discretionary activity, so council can consider it on a case-by-case basis and can decline or grant that application, can refuse a trial if the evidence given on that specific trial don't demonstrate that the risk can be sufficiently managed. So, and then that's also a consistency element with the other provisions, but from my perspective as well, I think it's quite important that the provisions, you know, they're supposed to be adaptive. It's an adaptive management approach. So, you know, full releases are prohibited, but then there's a discretionary activity for trials, because over time it may be that technology improves, thinking around scientific uncertainty, they move on, and there may be a time where a trial could be established in accordance with the risk management approach. So that's the summarised response to that. And then the third question was regarding the Federated Farmers alternative wording. And we had some feedback there from our pre-circulated provisions from Federated Farmers. And the point we made there was, the question that was asked there was, you know, were the Federated Farmers witnesses involved in the caucusing of the provisions? And the answer was no, because Federated Farmers didn't actually put forward a planner in the hearing. So the expert planners that did provide evidence in the hearing were myself, Peter, and also Ben Warren on behalf of Solon House. So that's why we that weren't included. But also, you know, we did look at what the wording they suggested, and it was quite significantly varied from what we were proposing. And ultimately, we don't think that the provisions were supported by a Section 32 assessment or were justified in terms of the issues at hand. So that's sort of a paraphrased summary of our responses to those questions. We're happy to take any further questions.
Well, perhaps I'll just add a summary.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be good for David to respond to this, because the answer to the first couple of questions is really a matter of the build-up of this topic over quite some years. And some challenges to how the provisions should work, which has been pretty well thrashed out before it's got here. And David's been involved in a lot of those previous exercises. So that doesn't mean, and this is probably the point that that I want to make, it doesn't mean that there's been a blind accepted response to what's happened previously. So when the planners went into this exercise, you recall that there was in terms of the principle of what was being put forward by the parties represented by the planners, there was no differences in the basic principle and how these things, including where, what activity status applied to various things. That wasn't the issue. The issue that that I had in particular, and it was assisted very much by Ben, who's got a much closer knowledge of your plan than I do, was how the particular phraseology, the wording, the sense of it proposed, the consistency with other parts of the plan, how this would work with other things, how that was put together. And that was really the prime basis of the discussion that the planners had, was going through where we had differences coming out of the hearing, working that through, and we were able to achieve agreement on that. So that's my general response to the activity status. And just a quick one about the Federated Farmers. I sort of zero in on the GMO release, which is prohibited under the provisions that we've put forward, and Federated Farmers are saying it should be permitted. So you can't get further apart than prohibited and permitted. And you recall that the position that Federated Farmers took at the hearing, and what they've taken, the position they've taken in previous plan changes, is that they continue to have the belief that you can rely on the EPA process to manage the effects of GMOs, and there's no place for in this case regional plan intervention. So their provisions say simply it's permitted if you've got the EPA approval. That's a long way away from the basis of what the parties have put
questions from any councillors?
So if the EPA is too far away and each regional council should have their own plan, what's the point of the EPA? If it's not doing its, not doing its job, or it's in your opinion?
It's a matter of who deals with what. So the EPA is certainly a risk management authority, and the way that these provisions work is that there's a prerequisite. There's still a prerequisite for an EPA approval. So the regional council doesn't have to get into the technicalities of GMO methods that are properly the role of the EPA. Where the regional councils and also district councils, for that matter, come in, is to take into account any local interests in, that are particular to a region or a district that might then be relevant to your particular role as a regional council. That particular position, there may well be factors that the EPA hasn't taken into account that might be relevant at a regional or district council, has really been confirmed by the Brian Court and High Court when this question's been raised to them by the Federal Farmers.
So by the regional council going to the next step above the EPA, are we taking on any extra liability that we're unsure of, per chance? Are we going to be liable for something that we put into place that may be challenged and having a cost against somebody else? That's really the question.
I think, Ben, I don't know if you're the best one to answer that question in terms of liability, because it's a generic question that gets raised about any regional council role in administering consent.
My view on that would be is that it would be around any concern about liability would be about process, and provided that would follow due process, then that would be enough. Like, and that's our role, is to follow process.
So the process that we would have to follow would be that written or prescribed by an expert of some description, rather than just a gut feeling?
You would use experts to come to a decision.
Okay, so it's the liability that I am concerned about. If we put something in writing, we put it into place, and it's deemed to be non-beneficial to somebody who can then as Ben has said, the method we put into place and the people we've used, but if there is then some legal challenge that puts us into liability, then I am concerned for that process. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, perhaps if you just look at the questions that have been raised about the activity category.
Sure.
The permitted category, that has actually been through quite a process already it's got here, to say, well, these particular activities which you can have confidence are contained or adequately administered in terms of, the vet administration and so on. I think that's permitted activity which I think you can rely on the fact that you're not doing anything.
I think you can rely, because all of a sudden that,
the question's been that question that you raised in terms of that category has been pretty squeaky.
Okay. Right, that's fine.
So if you look at the other one that one, and of course release is prohibited anyway, so you're not going to get that.
That's right.
But if you look at trials, and this is the discretionary activity thing, it's this is the process matter that Ben's raising. It must be a publicly notified application.
On a
notified application, anyone can raise any issues they like, including liability. And if those issues are raised, it goes to a hearing, and that's considered on a GMO specific basis. So not saying that that wouldn't be a relevant factor, but you could have some comfort that anyone who wants to raise that issue can do so through that notified process.
Okay.
And you can look at it in terms of the point of view of exactly what's being proposed. So and a big part of that is in terms of the GMO trials, even it's been through the EPA already, so you've got that's happened already in terms of of you adopting the role as a decision maker as a council, are you satisfied that risk is being adequately dealt with? So
I'm going to put my last question. It's hypothetical. If our council decided to have no provision for anything in our statutes for GMO whatsoever, and somebody introduced a trial, test, whatever you like to call it, into Northland, and it went wrong, who pays for the cleanup? Who are the people who are liable for not having policed their rules above us, if you like, or beside us, whatever? Who would be liable for the cleanup? Whoever, maybe, well, you've just said that this, the original questions, all these people, all these ones have got rules. If they don't enforce them and it comes down the chain to the regional council, have we then, by not policing a rule that we've got in place, are we the liability first cab off the block? If we are we better to say we're not having any at all and let the next group take the liability, which may be a colossal amount of money, of which I don't know whether our ratepayers should have to pay for it? That's what I'm saying. That's the question. That's hypothetical, of course.
Yeah, I mean, Ben might want to add to this, but there's a step back from this in terms of, you know, the fundamental question here is that is the management of GMOs in this area or at least in part, if it would be in part, a regional council responsibility? Is it something that you should be doing? So I don't think the answer to that question is, well, we don't want to do it because we're concerned about the liability coming out of it. So I don't know.
As I say, it was extremely hypothetical, but I'll just
I think, I mean, and sort of my advice to you is based on that more fundamental approach, is this an appropriate matter for you to be dealing with in your regional planning?
So, John, I think this is probably a question which is not relevant to the planners, but it may well be a question that we should look to get some legal advice on.
Yeah, I think it's been answered, though, because I know that Ben has looked at it before, and I know that the question is, I still have this horrible doubt that if it's a multi-million dollar problem, that we're first cab off the right rank.
No, there is no opportunity for participation from the gallery in this stage of the hearing, so I must insist on that.
If I can add a couple of points as well, just to touch on what Peter said. I think the EPA approval process prior to going for regional consent is really important because you establish a lot of baseline facts from the EPA approval.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, if you will, scientific technical information will be established. What the regional council would be looking to in its consent for, say, a discretionary field trial is what Peter referred to. It's the local context, the cultural concerns, and any other interests or concerns that maybe come up from the local context. I think that's quite important. The differentiates between the two processes. I also think, as a second point, the Environment Court, the High Court, have all determined that there is jurisdiction for local authorities, both district and regional councils, to regulate GMOs in the planning documents. So that is established in that sense. And what is before you is evidence to say that these provisions should be included based on the expert evidence we've got.
Are there any other questions?
Yeah, oh, I've just got a couple. The first one is just regarding trials within the CMA. I see you've got the words potentially to change there to biocontained, and that's where my concerns lie in terms of risk. Like a trial, obviously if it's a land-based trial where it's say a recirculating system where there's no chance whatsoever, and this is where these words biocontained are very important, there's no chance whatsoever of any of the seawater that which may have a risk element to it entering into the CMA. That's where the risk lies. Depending on whether if you're looking at oysters, like shellfish are obviously more risky than finfish because you're looking at spat, which may spread a lot simpler than say a fish. It's got to be a fingerling. So let's just say hypothetically there was a GMO trial with kingfish. It's quite easy to have provisions, and basically conditions, obviously no fingerlings will be transferred off site, da 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 da. So I'm reasonably, given the conditions of any trial would dictate that, you could probably contain that. The vaccines are another kettle of fish in that. From what I read there, if you're talking about saying we should not get in the way of administering treatment to animals, like a rule shouldn't get in the way of that. Now that contravenes prohibiting the release of GMOs into the CMA. Because what you're saying is, you could affect a sense of, you might have a situation where a vet administers a vaccine which has got a GMO product in it, which is maybe a GMO organism, and then if that gets into the CMA, you cannot get it out. And that relates to that, the liability aspect, a whole lot of issues around there. So I think if those vaccines were administered in a basically a biocontained area, I wouldn't have the same amount of concern. You see what I'm getting at there? Because if you're administering a vaccine, a GMO vaccine, to a kingfish farm and fingerlings are sold, that potentially you could be releasing an unknown risk, and this comes back to the original hearing when we were hearing about issues like
Justin, this is actually not the deliberations. This is where we're actually asking questions. So you really need to frame what you're saying as a question to our planners.
Well, so the question is, given the feedback, what do you see that there's a risk there potentially? If what level of risk is there if a vet is administering a vaccine, and it gets into the CMA?
So there's been some advice given on this by Professor Heinemann previously when we were preparing our response to the questions. I went back and looked at the previous evidence that Professor Heinemann gave on the equivalent provision in the Whangarei District Council and Far North District Council provisions. I can find that advice and circulate it to you so you have it, but essentially to paraphrase it, he said that it's a low level of risk, highly low level of risk, to the point where he was comfortable to recommend permitted activity status. So that decision was made based on his expert evidence, and I believe it has something to do with the definitions of viable and non-viable genetically modified veterinary vaccines. I don't have that immediately in front of me, but that's what we did look at when we went back and provided this response to your question about veterinary vaccines.
His advice, was that pertaining more to the application of vaccines in a sort of on a land-based setting, like to livestock and agricultural sector? Because to me, there's a much greater risk in the sort of CMA area, because you, like you've noted here, once something's released into the CMA, you cannot, no amount of bond is going to get it out.
Do you agree? So you gave advice in two contexts. One was initially this matter came up in the Auckland Unitary Plan hearings. So you'd appreciate the Auckland Unitary Plan was both land-based and CMA provisions. So he initially gave that advice based on that setting. And then what happened was the Whangarei District Council and Far North District Council council processes were running concurrently to that, but albeit at a different phase. So the hearings for the unitary plan would have been close to a year before the hearings for WDC and Far North. And what happened was Professor Heinemann provided advice to the unitary plan, and then through the Whanganui District Council and Far North District Council plan process, he provided that advice adapted for those provisions. And essentially his advice was the same. It's that it can be safe. A veterinary vaccine administered by a vet is a suitable control for a GMO vaccine. Without having the advice that he gave direct to hand, I can't go into the specifics of what he said, but that's essentially the conclusion he reached, and that he was comfortable with the permitted activity status, both in the unitary plan for CMA and land-based, and also for the Whanganui District Council in terms of land-based provisions.
Just one other question. Given the nature that vaccines are constantly being redeveloped and new vaccines are being developed, is there a potential future risk that might at this stage be unforeseen in terms of, you know, this provision that, you know, you're allowed freely to administer G vaccines, you know, in terms of the CMA, the coastal marine environment?
Well, I don't think I can unequivocally say there won't be some element of risk. I guess it's a degree of risk. You know, what degree of risk is the council willing to tolerate? Do you look at things in isolation and say there must be no risk whatsoever? Or is there a point or a threshold where the element of risk is acceptable? So it's a bit difficult to answer that question. I can't say that there will be zero risk, because I'm not an expert in that field. But what I can say is I've seen advice and evidence on this matter from Professor Lyman, which has said that he was, from his perspective, comfortable with the permitted activity status for those activities.
And just remember, there's also a process that goes into approving those vaccines. Before it gets even be considered under the plan.
Any other questions?
Just a really quick one, and I actually think we can go through the planners. In terms of the framing of the provisions for the RMA activities, this rule covers section. I know that our main regional plan, that was changed from how that was originally formatted and set out, where it was done. I am assuming that this has been aligned with the revised version that came through from the hearing panel, as opposed to the original proposed regional plan.
That's a big question.
Yeah, that's a big question.
Thought it might be,
so,
but I fire it out for the planners.
The short answer is no. So
okay.
We would need to align that to
so
fit.
So we'll still need to do that.
To fit the format.
Okay.
Yeah. Or just as further explanation, what it'll mean is a change to the header. So under the rule, there's some bullet points, which refers to those relevant sections of the Act. It's just a bit of a changing to the wording, and then of the header, and then also a bit of a changing to the way that we refer to those particular sections of the Act.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no change in effect, it's just the style that we use.
Indeed, and I just wanted to check to see whether or not that had happened, because I didn't think it had reading it.
Yep.
That's all right, thank you. Okay. All I have, thank you very much.
There's no other questions from the councillors.